The Manx Wildlife Trust has announced a new project to restore a Manx rainforest at Glen Alden. I caught up with outgoing Trust CEO Lee Morris to find out more.
Yeah, we've delightfully purchased, through funding from Aviva and the Wildlife Trust Federation, Glen Alden Estate, 1,124 acres of wonderful Manx landscape and habitat.
And one of the rare things that happens to me in doing these interviews is getting the opportunity to walk up to the top of a beautiful valley at Glen Alden and do an interview. It's quite stunning, this location.
It's amazing, isn't it, sitting here? We're genuinely, you know, walking up the hill together, walking up through the glen, through the valley in the glen. It's wonderful, and I think we're really keen, Manx Wildlife Trust, that the listeners know that it's going to be wonderful forever, in perpetuity, for the Manx Nation in our ownership. Hopefully more wonderful.
So tell us then a bit about what has actually been announced. You know, the scale of this is huge, isn't it?
Let's start with the scale. Often you throw numbers out, but I'll try and put some benchmarks against it. So 1,124 acres, more than quadruples the land that Manx Wildlife Trust owned. It'll be our 34th nature reserve. Some of those are, you know, half an acre, 1 acre field, very precious meadows. I think it's an indication about how the wildlife trusts, and within that Manx Wildlife Trust, worth saying an independent Isle of Man charity, but part of the Federation across the British Islands, how we've evolved over years. So we're over, you know, 52 years old now, but the wildlife trusts are probably 100 years old in totality. And I think when Manx Wildlife Trust was set up, or the other wildlife trusts were set up, they would, you know, get little bits of precious land and put a fence around it and protect it and conserve it. And we still do that, and that still remains really important. You know, Close Sartfield Nature Reserve is amazing for the Isle of Man. But we've realised, as a whole movement, beyond the Wildlife Trust, all the environmentalists and conservationists around the world, this is a global thing, have realised that if you just protect little bits of land for conservation, everything in between isn't protected, and also that impacts on the bits you're protecting. So what we really need to be doing, according to, you know, Lawton principles, is getting bigger, better and more joined up, working on a bigger scale. And this, for Manx Wildlife Trust, is a bigger scale. This is a landscape scale, but it doesn't have to be micromanaged. So, you know, that really does give us a chunk of the Isle of Man that we can respect and start to look at things on a whole landscape scale.
And planting up 750 acres with trees, that's not going to be done in a weekend, is it?
No, that again, it's a long-term vision. There might be a few, and literally a few, just planted if people from the Wildlife Trust or Aviva come, so that they can say they've put the first tree in the ground. But there'll be no serious tree planting that anyone would notice for at least, you know, there'll be none done this autumn winter. There might be done in the autumn winter of 26-27, TBC. There's various hoops to go through to that, but certainly nothing in the short term. And then they're not all suddenly going to appear overnight. The 750 acres will be planted over a period of years, and we'll grow the trees locally. We've got a nursery beautifully just a couple of miles down the road at Milltown. We've got a fantastic partnership with Milltown Gardens and Estates, and it is a fantastic partnership. And so we've got a tree nursery there, member of staff, but also a group of volunteers who are going to help grow the trees that we need for Glen Alden and for Gleondarroch and for Craigie Cowan and hopefully other schemes around the island.
And I guess what you don't want would be to plant 1,000 trees in a block, which all grow and mature at about the same rate, and you end up with
this is a challenge with any forest restoration, and it is a temperate rainforest. And for the listeners, you know, rainforest isn't that Brazil. A rainforest is, let's be simple, it's trees, whatever size a tree is, that gets wet a lot, that got a lot of rainfall. And in a temperate rainforest, it's not just the British Islands, and including the Isle of Man, that have temperate rainforest. There's temperate rainforests in South America, in Chile, in China, and other places around the world where there are temperate rainforests. And they are areas that are clearly not tropical. They get a significant amount of rainfall, but they don't get too cold. So the Isle of Man does get a frost occasionally, but we're not getting to minus 10 for 3 weeks, are we? So we're in that world. And the other classical feature then of a temperate rainforest is you get plants growing on plants growing on plants. So you have the trees, and on the trees you've got mosses, lichens, liverworts, ferns. They're growing on that in that environment. So it's a very, very special environment. If there are remnants, fragments of that. The term that's used is ghost rainforest. And there are quite a few fragments in the north of the Isle of Man, in and around Glen Alden. You know, some of the bits of Glen Alden down the bottom are already that for 20 plus years, 25 years, Manx Wildlife Trust, through our senior ecologist Andre Doubledam and David Bellamy, our head of conservation, wrote a dissertation on it when he was a student at Edinburgh University about, you know, joining the and reforesting some of the fragments in the north of the island. And we would really like the listeners to know that this hasn't just been opportunistic. There's been a long-term vision within the charity to have trees planted in these areas. We're going to join up those fragments of rainforest over time. But if you've got an established rainforest, there's not just trees of one age, as you say. There's trees of 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year, 6 year. So you can't do that overnight. But inevitably, there's going to be some areas that are planted. And then over time, that's why it's a long project. You know, Aviva are funding this for 80 years. It's a wonderful vision that eventually those trees will seed. And if we allow them to germinate naturally and regenerate, then you will start to get the succession coming through in the forests. And that's then ultimately you've created that. But you've got to start somewhere. If you've got a bracken slope now, as we're looking at over there, that used to be forest, I've got no doubt. So we're going to recreate that back into the Manx landscape as a piece of precious forest. We can plant trees, but ultimately it's going to take years. You know, within 8 to 10 years, it's going to look like there's trees on it. They'll have grown a bit, da da da. But it's going to take 30, 40, 50. You know, we're planting these for the next generations when that forest really starts to be an ecosystem properly.
People living in Ramsey, first of all, don't need to be worried, do they, that by planting all these trees, suddenly there's going to be a lot more rain in Ramsey. That's not what rainforests necessarily do, is it?
No. We're not putting up a rain machine. It's a wet valley, and actually, if not the people in Ramsey, certainly the people downstream in the Glen Alden River might be quite happy. In the 1930s, there was a major flood in Glen Alden, like a big one, and this isn't going to put a tap on it to mitigate the risk of there ever being a flood. But if you get a heavy rainfall now on the slopes we're looking at, that water's going to get straight into that river and straight into the houses and homes downstream a lot quicker than when it's got a rainforestation on the slopes. So that as a nature-based solution is going to mitigate the risk of major flooding events in future. And there has been one in the past, so the likelihood is there'll be one in the future. So if we, you know, crack on with this, it's not going to make that risk worse.
I mean, you mentioned there about the trees maturing and then reseeding, and then and gradually the forest will develop into a kind of a range of young trees, middle-aged trees, older trees. What sort of management is required? Because I mean, one of the things we can see on the brew just ahead of us is half a dozen sheep. Will there need to be animals within the forest to ensure that ground is rooted up and seeds get places that they can land and grow?
There's no large native wild animals in the Isle of Man. So sheep, cattle do serve important functions in forest environments. But ultimately, you know, if the sheep over there that we're looking at now, if there were tree seedlings there now, they'd eat them. So that doesn't mean that every sheep's bad. I say that, and I'm grinning when I say it. We had the chat walking up the hill. It's very genuine. But there does need to be some management. But we're delighted that the tenant farmer that was on the land before, and we bought it as vacant possession. It was advertised as vacant possession. We got it as vacant possession. But we've been very conscious, and we were conscious anyway, but I had a meeting with MNFU and members of MNFU actually talking about another site of ours, Craigie Cowan. But the topic came up then that, yes, if we're buying land off an owner-occupier, that's fine. But if we're buying land off a landlord and then we're kicking tenant farmers off, that's not so good for the tenant farmer. So we're hyper-conscious of that as a charity. So we're delighted that Robbie's, you know, signed a new tenancy agreement with us, and he's getting all the ADS funding, and we're very happy that he gets that, and it's significant. And so we want to build that relationship with him. Now, you know, my ambition would be that once we've learnt the site and we've got a clear plan on where we're going to be planting trees and the succession of that, Robbie's very much in the mix, and you would need fencing. Ultimately, if you plant young trees, the sheep will eat them. So you have to manage them for a certain number of years while the trees get big enough to get beyond that. Now, you've then got an issue of succession, but there's rotational, there are ways globally that we can learn from as an island where we can work in harmony. And agroforestry is not a, you know, no, I'll rephrase that. Agroforestry is a very, very credible way of farming in the future. And we believe, and I believe, that for the Isle of Man, agroforestry has got potential because we can do nature, carbon and food production. And for the amount of meat and dairy that we have on the island, I think agroforestry would work without any impact whatsoever on our food production, on our food resilience. We can do all that together. We can have our cake and eat it. You know, we can get the farmers and the nature conservationists working in tandem to do what's best for our biosphere reserve, and food security would not be impacted one jot.
Agroforestry then, tell us what you mean by that. I mean, I guess that you don't mean growing loads and loads of apple and pear trees, but potentially some.
Potentially some community orchards. We've just planted a community orchard at Crossags, actually, with Rotary Club of Douglas, and there in the agroforestry model there. So the Hairpin Woodland Park, I won't go off on a whole tangent, but let's just say the Hairpin Woodland Park, very close to this site, is where we're hoping to engage lots of people and showcase methods. Glenaldin is a big scale demonstration, we're hoping, but maybe there might be an orchard, that's to be confirmed. But certainly agroforestry, you know, if you're a sheep or a cow, you put them in a field where there's trees at one end, where are they going? Now, they're going where there's a bit of shelter, there's a bit of shade. They're going where they're happy, they can grubble around, they rub up against the trees. Animal welfare, husbandry, these are proven things. And they then help, because as you say, they grub up, they truffle and they create and they smash a few trees down. And that's, we're not trying to grow a pristine Chelsea show garden, we're trying to grow a living forest. So whether they were the giant elk that's in the Manx Museum years ago, those animals exist. We're absolutely of that mind. So we would, again, David Bellamy, our head of conservation, and Andre and Seb Swithenbank, I'm sure will work the detail of this out. But the broad vision of there being a forested woodland in the right places in Glenaldin, where there are large animals, hopefully ones owned by farmers, going in, doing what they do as animals, having a nicer life and producing food for the island, is a great vision, and I think that's really achievable.
You mentioned earlier in the interview about Aviva. None of this could have happened without Aviva's involvement. How did that come about?
Yeah, so Aviva is a large insurance company, are keen to get to what they call net zero by 2040. And they announced that they were putting a very large amount of money to help with, ultimately, as a company, you can reduce your carbon footprint internally, you know, reduce your miles, turn your buildings, get your power right, you'll still ultimately be having a carbon footprint because you're doing stuff. So there's a bit at the end they need to offset. And the way they decided to offset it was not go off and buy their own land and plant quick-growing Sitka spruce or something, that they would work with the wildlife trusts, which I think is genius on their part, because ultimately the wildlife trusts in their entirety will own the land and they're going to create the right habitat. So in effect, what Aviva are doing is creating nature reserves that they won't own. And they're trading off, that they're not asking for the highest yielding carbon to be planted, because they want to have really high integrity carbon credits where it's the right trees, the right biodiversity mixes, you know, in the right places. And the Wildlife Trusts are a perfect partner for them. So they funded the Wildlife Trust. It's about an 80-year project, just short of £40 million. And that was announced in 2022. In 2023, early on, just in our 50th year, we were successful in, through that project, gaining funding for to buy Craigie Cowan. And that's gone through planning, and people have planted it, and the Woodland Trust are involved, and there's a whole community of volunteers in the Isle of Man that's helped us pretty much plant Craigie Cowan. And we bid it in again for Glen Aldin, but other wildlife trusts who are in the right area for temperate rainforest. So if you're the Essex Wildlife Trust, you're not bidding in for this because it's very dry in Essex. But you know, Scotland, Cumbria, Lancashire, parts of Wales, north and south, Devon, Cornwall, bits of Ulster and the Isle of Man are all in what they call the temperate rainforest belt. So we could bid in. And then it's a case of when the right bits of land come up, we put in a bid. And we can do the initial mapping. We can see where there used to be trees. So we can say that within the 1,124 acres, we're confident that 750 used to be forest, and we're going to reforest them. The rest is, doesn't have to be planted. We're not trying to squeeze every tree in possible. So I can't applaud the Aviva project enough. Some people will say it's greenwashing, you know, but you know, pragmatically, everyone that works in a corporate business is not the devil. There's a lot of really caring people. Look at the Isle of Man. We've got some fantastic people in our business community working in a sustainable way. They're wonderful. And if they're now at a place where they're trying to help the environment, then I celebrate that. And so what we've done as a charity, I think, really well, is that we've seized that opportunity for the Isle of Man to get what now is multi-millions of pounds of investment from a UK company coming into the Isle of Man that's going to employ people. You know, we've got now two staff. We're going to be employing two more through Glen Aldin funding that's going to be funded by Aviva. So that's four livelihoods in the Isle of Man. Plus they're buying land in perpetuity for the Manx Nation. I think there's no risk of us ever doing anything bad with this land if Manx Wildlife Trust owned our MMRs and the whole federation wouldn't allow it. So it's strength for the island, it's livelihoods for the island, it's investment in the island, and we're going to help the island deliver its global and international targets under the global biodiversity framework and the climate change targets, and we're doing it right here, and someone off island's paying for it. So we are delighted, as you can sense in my voice, of getting this over the line. It's really good for us.
And of course, what you've described, or you mentioned earlier, the whole greenwashing label, the relatively easy option is to find quite easy flat bits of ground and put a load of trees on it. This is anything but easy when it comes to the landscape, and you know, certainly what you've said in terms of Aviva's philosophy, it does sound like the right sort of idea. But yeah, actually planting on in places 45 degree, maybe even more than 45 degree slopes, that's not going to be an easy thing to do, is it?
No, and we've got some. Let me praise Andre up, our senior ecologist. Andre's been ploughing almost a lone furrow in doing little bits of the island for 20 odd years, and you know, he rocks up and gets a spade and off he goes up the hill, and people follow him because they're inspired by him and what he's doing. So I think people will come, as Craigie Cowan and other sites are showing. There's a real enthusiasm within many people in the island, and the Woodland Trust are a wonderful partner for us, and I think the enthusiasm of, you know, of Phil and Falk and Steve and the others in the Woodland Trust, it's a genuine partnership relationship, and they've got loads of people that love rocking up every week and planting trees, and they'll still do their sites, and we'll get volunteers on here, but yeah, they'll go up the hills. And it's an important point, because back in the day, you know, 20, 30 years ago, when people started talking about offsetting, they did exactly what you said. They bought prime agricultural land. Maybe not in the Isle of Man, but in the UK, they bought prime agricultural land and they stuck Sitka spruce on. And the legacy of that is one of greenwashing and unhappy farming community. And we are very conscious not to do that here. Now, those slopes over there are very steep. They're covered in bracken. They used to be forest. And that should be forest again. And the Isle of Man will be a better place when that's a woodland. But we're not going in flat prime agricultural land, because that's needed to grow Manx food.
How do we know, because I know I was involved with Arbury and Rushen Parish Commissioners planting with the Woodland Trust some brews just up the road from me at the Slough. And Steve, who you mentioned there, said, well, yeah, anywhere where there's bracken, we know is good for trees. How do we know this?
Bracken as a plant has got very deep, almost rhizomatous roots. They need a deep layer of soil. So it's a very simple ready reckoner, but it's a pretty good one, is that where you've got bracken, there's a depth of soil that will sustain trees. That's it. And it's a good ready reckoner.
And the other thing that we can see on the slopes here is quite a lot of bluebells, which I guess would have been
underneath
growing
trees.
Underneath trees.
They'd have been underneath trees. That's another great indicator that that used to be woodland, because the bluebells are there and they would have previously been underneath trees, and they've sustained under the bracken.
And I guess as well, I mean, you're the expert, not me, but underneath the bracken and growing possibly even on the bracken, but certainly under the bracken, there will be things that once the trees start to grow, they will pop up from the ground and start growing on the trees.
I think yes is the short answer. The slightly longer answer is that the ecosystem that is an established forest, temperate rainforest, is amazing from the soil up. So that the fungi, you know, the invertebrates that live in there, everyone knows what a bird looks like and they know what a tree looks like. But the world is learning more and more important now are the small things. Because without the small things, you don't get the big things. I'm not an ecologist by background. I'm a horticultural educator that's, you know, became a conservationist. But I've actually learned a huge amount from working with ecologists that's reinforced my own learning, that those little things matter. But you can't switch those on. Now, some of those remnants might still and probably still will be there. And at Craigie Cowan, you're seeing that already. Some of the things are already starting to come back. But ultimately, people are going to want to know, if you like, key indicator species that we've been a success. So if you wanted to talk birds, the two I'm sort of repeating, wood warblers, they don't nest on the island. On a valley like this would be prime for them. Ringdoozles, prime for them. The hen harries that are already around here, wonderful. But yet, fungi, inverts, trees, you know, that we have the biggest slug lives in a small pocket of forest in the Isle of Man. Is it the ash black slug? It's about a foot long, apparently. Imagine that. You wouldn't show that. You wouldn't take that home on a Saturday, would you? But maybe they'd come back as well. And we shouldn't undervalue that. I am speaking as, you know, the CEO of a wildlife trust, as a conservationist. So let's just reaffirm that. But this is important for everyone. And the world is realising now that biodiversity, climate, are important issues for everyone. And someone needs to champion that. And in the Isle of Man, where we are the world's only whole nation UNESCO biosphere reserve, I've got no doubt that we can be what good looks like, really, and shine. And that the whole nation, the economy and everything else will benefit from us doing that. So from 1 acre flower meadows, we're suddenly doing that in 1,124 acres. And if it works, there's a lot more land in the island that maybe other people are inspired to follow our lead.
And one of the other things, of course, about this is that there will be footpaths running through already beautiful area. There's a footpath here. And the feeling that you get walking through forests, I mean, it's one of my regrets about the Isle of Man, there's not many of them, but is that we don't have large forests. But this will be one, and effectively you can walk through and experience that.
Yes, the little bits we've got left, the national glens, etc., they tend to be the very inaccessible slopes where, sadly, people just simply haven't been able to cut the trees down. Oh, happily they haven't, but it's sad that's the only reason that they're there. People are so important. Again, conservation can't win if we just put fences around things and tell people to go away and we're protecting this for nature. It doesn't work. Conservation is needed because of the impact of people, and the solution to that is people. And we really want everyone in the Isle of Man to understand that this site is as much important for people as it is for nature. When we've got no plans to put a car park in or encourage lots more people to come, we're hoping, you know, we might bring a school group here, we might bring our members up here. You know, if we want, we saw Dog Walker walking up today, didn't we? Peter and his two Labradors. So I think those people are wanted. Nature benefits people. And between me and you, clearly, no one else is listening. If we can get people to see the benefits of nature, they'll do our job for us, and conservation charities will become redundant because people just value the nature that's around them and make sure that they're good custodians of it. That's the tech, and actually we want it to be, whether that's green prescribing, coming up and getting a bit of mental health and well-being. Who has a bad day in nature?
You mentioned about the biosphere, the man and the biosphere status for the whole of the island. That was something quite special.
I've thought lots about this in my 5.5 years in the Isle of Man. Firstly, it is a tremendous badge, and I would hope that everyone, whether they're the most cynical person in the island or not, would love the Isle of Man and applaud what a wonderful place it is. And therefore, we should be proud that we are the only whole nation UNESCO biosphere reserve on the planet. That's pretty cool. But it's not a badge of perfection. And I think there's an evolution from the core team, and there would have been a core team of people pre-me that got the biosphere status, that had the vision to do that. And I think you were part of that. And I think getting that status was a really good move. Well done. And so probably then the island's got to get used to that. And I think looking back on in my time here, the island's come to realise, more importantly, what the biosphere is. And I think it needs to evolve. And hopefully I've been a part of that, working with Gail and Corin and Peter Reed in helping, you know, be almost a spark to get a new biosphere board and getting it more than, you know, it was buried in DEFA, and therefore it was seen as an environmental DEFA government project. It needs to be so much more than that. It needs to be an island, whole island owned project, and I think that's the way that it's going. So I think it's just, in as a plant starts off as seed and it germinates and then it grows and it matures, and I think that's how the biosphere is in the Isle of Man. But I want to reassure even the most cynical people that it's not stood dormant. It's growing. And I see it growing really strongly, and I can see the vision of what it's going to grow into. And please, everyone, understand what a wonderful thing that is for the island to have that status, and that we need to learn and grow with it and maximise the opportunity. But yes, I think it should be a chip on everyone's shoulders, but it needs to be a chip on the Chief Minister's shoulder and the Treasury Minister's shoulder and the Health Minister's shoulder, not just the DEFA Minister's shoulder. And I think that's the trajectory that it's on.
I suppose part of the problem maybe with the whole the biosphere, the way in which it is viewed, is because we refer to the biosphere, whereas its, you know, full title is Man in the Biosphere. And it is, well, when the status was granted to the Isle of Man, it was recognising the fact that people in the Isle of Man interact quite well with their environment. Now, some people in your field, in the Wildlife Trust conservation type field, would say that actually we should keep people away and allow the environment to be better protected, because people coming in will trample over the rare flowers or disturb the nesting birds or whatever it may be. Man in the Biosphere basically is encouraging people to be part of that, isn't it?
It's not black and white, but you're right. People are important. As I said earlier, people are important for conservation in the environment. We need people to care, people to action positively, and people to stop acting negatively where perhaps they are doing. I think it's just a culture. And we shouldn't use it as a, oh, we don't need to change because we're already a biosphere. I mean, that's just not right. And neither should we say we shouldn't be a biosphere because we're still putting sewage out in Peel Bay and Laxey Bay, and, you know, we're not doing this right, and therefore we should get rid of our biosphere status. It's not a perfect world. And I think we should, without being a parrot, we need to celebrate the fact that we've got this status, accept that it's not perfection, and maximise it to drive the agenda that we want for people, environment, food, climate change, everything.
You've mentioned a few times that you've been on the island 5.5 years as is it CEO of the Wildlife Trust, but you're very shortly about to leave us.
Yeah, it's bittersweet, genuinely, but not a more of an au revoir. I hope I'm going to work for the central team of the Wildlife Trusts. So there are 46 independent wildlife trusts. Manx Wildlife Trust is one of them. You know, large counties in England, the Scottish Wildlife Trust, Ulster Wildlife Trust, Alderney Wildlife Trust. But there's also a central team that work remotely, but there is a central office in Newark. I say central, it's not a head. Manx Wildlife Trust doesn't report. So in some ways, you could say it's a promotion into the central team in a new role, but it's also, I'll be supporting Manx Wildlife Trust as one of the members of the Federation. But yes, it's a new role as Director of International. And in simple terms, trying to make the international agendas, global biodiversity framework, climate change, COPs, everything else more relevant across the Federation, but also looking outwith in terms of how can we as a Federation maybe help more with the global conservation issues, because we've got 3,000 plus talented people and, you know, lots of skills and knowledge, and maybe as a Federation, if we work collegiately, we can actually help in places that need the help.
So just over 5.5 years ago then, you, I guess, saw an advert for the role that you've been in. What tempted you to come to the island?
At the time, I saw the advert in about September 2019. At the time, I was living in St Helena, doing agricultural development work for the St Helena government. Upskilling, yeah, very much with sustainability in mind, and education in schools and workshops with farmers and retailers. But I was in St Helena. The two-year contract was coming to an end. My wife was keen to move back near her parents, so we weren't going to extend. And I was looking at what next. And this leapt off the page as, in multiple ways. It, genuinely, only whole nation UNESCO Biosphere Reserve was an attraction to me. That made me lift my eyebrows. Crown dependency, the fact that that's part of an island network. I feel lovely on an island, and the opportunity to be the leader of the conservation charity in a crown dependency, working in a whole nation context in that UNESCO Biosphere Reserve, was very, very attractive. And also at the time, my mum was still alive, and it was also a chance for me to get a bit back nearer my family, as well as my wife getting back near hers.
St Helena is not really an easy place to get to or from, is it? So I guess that the family attraction or the more accessible nature of the Isle of Man would be a pretty good thing. I mean, it's how long would it take to get to and from St Helena?
A lot quicker than it was in 2016. In 2016, you had to get a boat from Cape Town. It took a week. And I know some people in the Isle of Man have done that, because that island network is important for us. Now you fly to Johannesburg, then you get a plane once a week from Johannesburg that touches down in Namibia to refuel, and then heads off across the South Atlantic for 1,200 miles to St Helena. But they still get one boat a month. You wouldn't say there's a boat in the morning in St Helena. You say there's a boat next month. They get one boat a month and typically one flight a week now. So the airport was game. They never had an airport till 2018. So that was, and we were there when the Royal Mail ship switched off. And anyway, I'm tangenting. But yes, very interesting. That was how you got to St Helena.
Yeah. And I suppose then the other point, when you came to the island, what were you expecting? And has the Isle of Man lived up to expectation? What's different? What's not? What's unusual about the place that you weren't expecting? You've got 20 minutes.
No, I'd visited the Isle of Man it was 99. I came to the Isle of Man because it was the eclipse year, and I visited. I've got a good friend that I went to horticultural college that works and lives on the Isle of Man, and I visited him with my spaniel back then and walked around spent 2 or 3 weeks walking around. So I knew it was a lovely place, and so when the job came up, I knew that. So I then moved here, it's better than, it's a lot better place than I was expecting it to be lovely, but genuinely is a wonderful place. And on that basis, I was delighted to join and still be on the Visit Isle of Man board. I think it's a well-kept secret. Now, maybe we don't want people to know about it, but I think it's a special place for nature, for people, for outdoor life, for scuba diving, which I love, for the culture, the Manx culture, the fire festival on Peel Beach. I could go on, I won't go off on a Visit Isle of Man tangent. But let's just say I was genuinely surprised at just how good the island was. And when I was appointed, I promised I would stay for 3 years, and my word's my bond, so I wouldn't have left, but I didn't want to go. So it's every time you move roles, there's always a pull and a push. But there's a lot of pull for my new role and very, very, very little push. Probably the only push is I'm getting older, and probably I want another chapter, and I can see a real opportunity. But yeah, this is a very, very special place. So it surprised me just how good it is. Yeah.
And what would I guess we're probably sitting in one of your greatest achievements, but what would you say your proudest moment or greatest achievement has been as chief exec?
Employing talented, brilliant people and enabling them to crack on. I'm very much of an empowerer and an enabler and an enthuser, rather than a pedantic manager that has to make every decision. I think I've and I do work with some brilliant people, some that were here and many of which we've appointed. I think that there's the mundane stuff. I think the charity is it was always in a good place. I think we're in a stronger place now. The year before I came, we'd traded in the red. I think we've just gone on evolution, and that's been the next stage of the charity. You know, we don't make lots of money, but we trade in the black, and we've grown what we do, and we're delivering some great projects. So I think the governance is important, and I think without good governance, and without, you know, we went out for the first time and recruited, advertised for trustees. That was the first thing we ever did. So I think in terms of the governance, the systems, you know, we're just literally going to switch on our cloud system this week to get ourselves in the cloud, and all the IT tidied up is again another thing I was keen to get over the line before I left. So I think the charity is a stronger place. Now, people might say, well, how does that help nature then? It's all right, you know, you're selling memberships and you've got an IT system, and how does that? Well, I think anyone that knows about charity and delivery, if you don't have that strong base, you can't do all the really cool, useful stuff. You've got to be strong, integrity, well-governed, and well-liked and well-respected for people to work with you. The other thing I've learned in my role, or it's been reinforced strongly, is the importance of relationships with people and organisations. Sadly, I've not got a relationship with every organisation I'd like, but I have to say most. And I think both through me and through Graham and David and all the rest of their teams, I think we've built up some fantastic relationships and partnerships with individuals and people on the island that see Manx Wildlife Trust as being genuinely open, transparent, enthused, trying to do good stuff. And I think that's a culture that, ultimately, that's a culture that comes, yeah, it does, it comes from the top. If I'm not of that ilk, the charity under me isn't of that ilk. So I've tried to do that. I've tried to make us a charity that people want to work with, and that's positive, and that we're trying to do good stuff and trying to work with other people. So I hope that's a part of my legacy. And then there's some wonderful projects. I joke, I'm getting embarrassing now, no pressure, but maybe one of the best things I've done is get ahead of conservation funded and get David Bellamy in the post. Because I think he could have a massive impact in for many years, hopefully, in terms of the conservation, because he knows the island, he knows the species, he knows the people, he's, you know, and he really cares passionately and gets stuff done. So maybe that's one of the best things I've done as well. But, you know, the projects, the people, and then the 50th anniversary year was wonderful in 2023, and everything that went with that, the rainforest projects with Craigie Cowan and getting more bits of land in there, and then Glen Alden, some of our marine work, seagrass, sharks, I could go on. And quite often what's forgotten, actually, is some of the, what you would say, the core conservation work. And it's easy to talk about all the new projects and forget the great work that Tricia, our reserves manager's done for donkey's years with the midweek muckers or the Ballacurry bashers or the other volunteers. And so that's when getting the King's Award for Voluntary Service that we accepted at Government House earlier this year. And I'm not a volunteer, so I don't wear the badge, but I'm really chuffed. So, for example, I went to Ballacurry for a weekend event last Saturday, and they've all got the badges on. And I think, you know, thank you to the politicians and His Excellency for helping the charity achieve that accolade of the King's Award for Voluntary Service. So I think that's something else that I will look back on and smile, thinking that, you know, those people genuinely deserve that. So I think the charity's in a great place. I'm going to call him my friend now. He's the new CEO has been appointed. So Graham Makepeace Warner has been appointed as the CEO. He won it in a fair fight. It was very competitive process. Irrespective of Graham for a second, I think for me to be in a place where I can hand over to someone internally, isn't that cool? You know, someone that really loves the island, that's banged five pins in the ground and is going to be in the long term, and the charity's to a place now where it can be passed on. That continuity, I think, for me personally, and I wasn't part of the recruitment process. I administered it, but I was no part of the decision making. You can't appoint your successor, can you? But I think I am delighted that it's gone internally, and I'm delighted that Graham personally's got it. You know, I appointed him as designated as my deputy. He represents us really well. He's very measured, loves the island. I'm getting him embarrassed now, but he'll have to take it. I think that, you know, Simon Kane, I do like football, and Simon Kane, my boss, when I handed my notice in, he went down the stairs and he looked back at and he said, Lee, I think this is like Jurgen Klopp leaving Liverpool. He said, you've come in, you've been all infused, you've done this, that and the other. He said, but they won the Premier League the season after with Arne Slot, didn't they? And I think in Graham, we might have Arne Slot. So I think I feel I'm leaving in a good place and still connected through the Wildlife Trust Central team. And I'll be back for the inter-island meeting in September on the island, which is here for the first time. I'm very proud of that, actually, that we've negotiated to get that back in the isle. For the first time, it's going to be in the Isle of Man. So I think that's a landmark moment as well, yeah. But probably getting the charity in a strong place, building up partnerships, employing really brilliant people and getting them to crack on is my hopeful legacy.
One of the things I suppose that the charity needs to do, and I think is pretty successful at it, is getting people to understand the value of what we're looking at. As we're doing this interview, the beauty of the island is clear to everyone, I think, but the landscapes, the biodiversity that lies within the landscapes, and the importance of that, perhaps is not something that we think about on a day-to-day basis as we drive through the countryside over the hills. How successful do you think you've been, or indeed the charity has been, in getting to as many people as possible that message?
I think the graph's gone up massively, and I think I've got a background in education and engagement, but being the CEO, you can't really do much of that because you juggle lots of balls. And I think this is where Graham has really shone in. When I started, Graham was on his own working 3 days a week as engagement manager, and now he's full time with a team of six or seven, and we've got artists and photographers and resident and comms people, and they're getting the message out there, and they are passionate conservationists who feel that every little bit of nudge they get on people makes them make a difference. And ultimately, again, it's all about people. Actually, the another bit of what I hope will be my legacy that's happening right now is that Manx Wildlife Trust have done in education wonderfully through education officers for many, many years. But you know, we've never got to every kid before, but last year we got to every single year five kid on the island in a partnership with the Outdoor Learning, again, partnerships, Greg at the Outdoor Learning Centre. I ended up, I was on a plane with him yesterday morning by chance, sat next to him, we had a lovely chat. But he's the guy with vision to get to every kid with an outdoor nature experience. And we've got the same vision that when they're out there with the little fires or building the shelters, they also appreciate the wildlife that's around them. And we're doing that. And the entitlement, again, I come back to, in a whole nation UNESCO Biosphere Reserve, every kid should be getting that. And so through Manx Wildlife Trust and the Outdoor Learning Centre, we're now doing that at year five. But we should be doing that in more ways. So that's then gets the chip on their shoulders. And ultimately, they're the people that will be the future leaders of Lloyds Bank International or Tynwald members. So you need to start them young, but you can't just go to the ones with enthusiastic teachers. You've got to get to everyone. So you've got to get strategic on how we're getting those messages out. So the education entitlement is one, and that is rolling now. And please, everyone, get behind that and big it up. We could do more. Packs for teachers, resources for teachers, upskill the teachers. Get that thread, that golden thread of environment and nature for every kid in different ways. That's doable, I've got no doubt. And then beyond that, you then engage and connect and inspire people in different ways. And I think that's where the, you know, the artist in resident was something, yeah, I stole that idea from a past job elsewhere. And we pitched that into the Arts Council and we launched it. And we're now into our third artist in resident, you know, Biosphere Artist in Residence with Manx Wildlife Trust running with the Arts Council. How cool is that? You know, Claire Payne was wonderful. Ali Hodgson was wonderful. And now we've got Amy doing the Soundology. So, and now we've got a photographer and a videographer who are creating the images and reaching other audiences. And you can't, you don't, if you don't care about nature, you won't help it. And if you don't know about it, you can't care. So there is a proven trajectory about how to do that and ways that we're trying to do that through Graham and his team. And so it'd be very exciting. I'm hoping there'll be a new head of engagement soon, probably one of the first things Graham's going to think about. So if there's people listening to this, you should be looking out for that.
You mentioned there David Bellamy, undoubtedly is a great asset to the Wildlife Trust, particularly in relation to how well he seems to get on with farmers. How did David end up going around visiting so many farms?
Yeah, I think my background's in crop growing, as you know. And when I moved to the island, there was talk about the island, we're going to launch an agri-environment scheme. And immediately I saw that as an advantage, because even with where we are now today in Glen Alden and the scale of it and the nature reserves we've got already, that's still only going to be 2% of the land mass, where farming is 75% of the island. So if we could work in positive, pragmatic ways with farmers, that's such a golden opportunity. So that came up, and as a team we decided that we were going to apply for the tender, and David came back to the island and he was the person that enabled us to actually win and deliver the tender. So David immediately, with his knowledge of the island, was visiting farmers and enthusing. So that's gone on really well, and some of the gains for nature that we've made in the last 5.5 years have been on farmland, working with farmers who are nature positive, nature friendly farming, growing food, but growing it in a let's call it a regenerative way. So that's been fantastic, and David's driven that. And another small part of my legacy is going to be that we've just got money again through the Central Wildlife Trust team via a trust fund in Canada, would you believe, that's funding agri-environment initiatives, and we've got funding for a post that hopefully will work in long term with our agri-environment officer delivering the DEFA contract. But this new post is going to allow us to focus in a far deeper way with the farmers that want to work with us around regenerative and nature-friendly farming. So we're looking to recruit that post now, and they will just work not delivering DEFA contracts, but working with the farmers, giving them more time and help, and really working closely with them. So for the charity, you know, from 5.5 years ago, when our nature reserves were less than 0.5% of the island, we've now got, if you like, 2% banked, but we're influencing, you know, a huge amount of that 70% that's farmed. So, and that's David's legacy.
Well, we're almost at the end of the programme now. One of the hardest parts about being the boss, I guess, is knowing when you don't know the answer.
Yeah, my wife tells me I'm too humble sometimes, and probably I overstate it sometimes that I don't know and da da da. I think that's a better place to be for me personally. I know there are some people that brass it and don't like to show that they don't know. I personally think that's wrong. I don't think that's the way to do it. You know, if you don't know how to build a wind farm, say you don't know how to build a wind farm. So I think you need to find people that know. And I learned that on big projects in the Middle East when I lived in Oman for some time on consultancy work there. I sat around the table with people that said they knew and they didn't. So I've never done that now. I say quite happily if I don't know.
That was Manx Wildlife Trust's soon-to-be-departing CEO, Lee Morris. So what do you think? Are we doing enough to support the island's biodiversity? I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayus and Geisiachrom. Thanks for listening.